And now our speaker for tonight, Susan F.
Hi, I'm Susan, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Susan.
It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to speak on what I have found helpful in my recovery. And I thought the best way to do that would be to talk a little bit about how I came to the rooms and my journey over the last 15 or 16 years in OA. So I have to say that I was born a compulsive overeater, and I know for a fact that I'll die one too. And the decision is whether or not I'll die a active compulsive overeater or I'll die one in recovery. And for today, I'm in recovery, and that's a blessing. I grew up in a household with another compulsive overeater, but I can say that my family was not one who served meals that were overindulgent. My mom cooked things that were healthy. The only problem was that I ate in between those meals, basically around the clock. I was definitely a grazer. And my family was one in which food was an area of celebration. I was always very conscious of my weight, and I learned early on how to camouflage it. That continued through childhood, through my teenage years, and you know, I've heard my story in the room. My self-esteem was very low. I isolated from people, and today I still feel those social inadequacies that I felt as a child. I didn't do a lot of dieting as a child. I went to the doctors and learned. My parents had healthy food choices for me. But it wasn't until my adult years that I was introduced to healthy diets through, you know, those major places that we know. I had two major weight losses as an adult. And I thought that at the end of each of those major weight losses that I was going to find nirvana, that I was going to change, that I was going to be more social, that I was going to have any problems fixed, that I was going to get my life wishes, that everything's going to be in clouds. And it never happened. At the end of each major weight loss, within a short period of a couple of years, or sometimes less than that, I would put back the weight. And my first major weight loss was like 50 pounds, 60 pounds. The second major weight loss was after I got married. It was about the same. And it was after my second major weight loss that someone told me about OA. And I said, no, that's okay. Thank you very much. They offered, you know, they told me about what the program was about. I came to a meeting. But I wasn't ready to hear about what OA had to offer. I said, you know, I just lost all this weight. I can do it myself. I'm doing really well. And they didn't push. And that was probably the first gift. They just told me and gave me the information. I had never heard about the rooms prior to that moment. And I'm very grateful for that person for telling me about the rooms at that time. So I did start to put back the weight after that major weight loss. And I had a medical complication. Landed me in the hospital, had major blood clots. And it was at that time when I was in the hospital that I heard the word, and I'm sure it was said in relationship to me before, obesity. It was on my medical chart. Obese female. And that word was shameful to me. And it was like a shock. Because even though I had been overweight over many years, since a child, just that word said out loud, like, I didn't even say it out loud. I knew the doctor did say it out loud, but just seeing it in black and white, it was horrible. It like hit me in the core, the word obese. And the complications that I had were due to surgery, but also they were due to the fact that I was female, but also due to the fact that I was overweight, that I was obese. And I went home, and I was in the hospital like 21 days. I went home, and I had lost weight when I was in the hospital, and I had, you know, I was very afraid of gaining weight back. So I went back to trying to do the mainline or one of those, and I couldn't go back to that. And I really was afraid. And I didn't really quite know what to do. So I remember that woman who shared with me about the work. And I spoke to her, and she offered to take me to a meeting. So what did I find helpful to get into recovery? Fear at that point. Plain and simple. I was fearful. I didn't know what to do. I, at that point, had nowhere to turn. And that was a really good place for me to be, because I didn't have the answer. And for me, not having an answer, not knowing where to go, was what I needed at that time. So she took me to my first OA meeting, and I didn't have any expectations as to what to, and took me to a meeting that actually I never went to again, but I did get a taste of what it was like, and eventually I ended up in a little meeting down in this area, and I went there once a week for I think a couple of years, 2 years, and that room became my higher power. I listened to what the people in the room said I had to do, and that was basically what I did. I did 30 days of writing. I called my sponsor daily, and I did weigh and measure my food. I had a food plan. That particular food plan was no sugar, and yeah, that was pretty much it. And I did the reading, you know, for 30 days, reading and writing. Then the books kind of went away, and the writing kind of went away. But I kept calling the sponsor, and but just the one meeting. And so we only did basically the first three steps or so. And I think I also did the fourth step. I did it in a group with a group of three other women. And that was a very enlightening experience for me. Because I found doing the fourth step, and it was I forget how many weeks it went. I don't know if it was like 8 weeks or something. And you did it based on the deadly sins. And I found that I wasn't alone. I used to think that my defects were very unique just to me. And so when I listened to everyone else, we actually did it together and we shared it together. I was like, oh, okay. I'm not so unique. You know, I'm not so different. I haven't done so many bad things. And that helped me because I used to be very ashamed of my character defects, of the things that I did, not only with food, the way in which I treated people, you know. And by sharing them with other people and getting them out and saying them out loud and hearing what other people had to say, I know it's not always necessarily the way people do their fourth step, but by hearing what other people had to say, that really lifted the shamefulness of it. And I came out of that fourth step feeling very light, feeling very, you know, lifted. That was something else I did for my recovery. But you really can't just stay there and go no further. I became pregnant during that time, which is one of my goals. I stepped out of the room after my daughter was born and stayed out for 18 months. Now, you can't work the program by yourself. It doesn't quite work well. And I did have an absent pregnancy, and I was still working the program at that time, and that was a gift. That was truly a gift. But after my daughter was born, life got in the way, and I couldn't do both in my head, which is just a rationalization, I know that now, and I left the program. So, for 18 months, I tried to do it by myself, it didn't work, and higher power had other plans for me. He had two plans. He put someone in my life, same person led me to the room, which is a gift. I saw this person daily. And I saw a change in this person. I saw this person, one, when they were not in recovery, and I saw them come back into recovery really strong. And I wanted what she had. And also, one instance, you know, they talk about getting hit on the head with a hammer sometimes, like that pain that I needed. I had a very strong recollection of when higher power gave me that message that I need to go back out of the room, back in the room. My daughter was in my back room, safe, in a safe environment, in her crib or one of those playpen things. I was in the kitchen, at the cabinet, in the cabinet, really, not at the cabinet, in the cabinet, doing you know what. And my daughter was crying because she needed me. She didn't fall. She just wanted my attention. I stayed in the cabinet getting what I wanted and let my daughter cry away. Okay, because at that moment in time, the food was more important than my child who was crying. I had a 15-second recollection of what I was doing from higher power. And it was like, oh my God, I don't care about that moment about the child who's crying in the other room. I want my stash. I want my food. That was higher power's message to me that you need to get yourself back into program. At the same time, he had this person in my life, and I saw what was happening with her. And I asked her about what she was doing, and she was telling me, you know, the program that she was working, which was a lot more structured than what she had been working. And said, you know, maybe you want to come to a meeting with me. And I said, I don't think so. She had actually been talking about this for quite a while, about a year before I came back in the room. But it takes me a while to get the idea. So she talked for about a year, you know, and so, as I said, 18 months later, I said, you know, I'd like to try what you're doing. Fortunately for me, the meeting she was talking about moved all the way down to where I was living, from North Jersey, all the way down to Union. That was another gift from higher power to me, because I don't know, very honestly, if I could have trekked all the way up to North Jersey with her working full-time and having a baby. So I was very lucky. So the meeting came down to that I was going to go to, and she became my sponsor again, and I started going to one meeting, with an agreement that I would up my meetings within a month or two, and that's what I started doing. So I started doing more meetings, and I'm grateful because I became honest, open, and willing to do what I had to do. Again, pain, fear led me to come back into the room. And so I agreed that I would go on a particular food plan, which I still do today, the same food plan. I just celebrated in April 11 years of abstinence, and I'm very grateful for every one of those days.
And I do 3 meals a day, nothing in between, and then a bowel adjustment. I weigh and measure my food. And it's the structure that is helpful to my recovery. And that's what I need, structure in my day. I do 3 meetings a week, really pretty much on a weekly basis. The one thing I started doing, which my sponsor told me to do, she said, plan your meetings first, and then plan the rest of your life around your meetings, the calendar around your meetings. So that's what I did. And it really helped, because I know what my 3 meetings are every week. They don't really vary. And it's helped because my spouse, who is the most supportive man in my program, also knows that he doesn't plan anything on the night that I have my meeting. And he's been doing that for basically the last 11 years, and which is great. He has his night where he does his thing, but he doesn't really plan anything on that one night. And then I do 2 meetings on the weekend. It just makes it easier, you know, in terms of my lifestyle. And knowing that I'm going to be at 2 meetings on Saturday and Sunday morning just makes it, I don't plan anything on those mornings either, except for where I have to be. And that's helped, knowing that. And I know that I have to call my sponsor, so I set a time in the night when I'm going to call my sponsor. That time's changed over the years as my daughter's changed her age, etc., but I know I have to do that. And I do the same thing with my sponsees. I say, you know, call me at X time. That contact with other compulsive overeaters is so necessary for my recovery, because it's the only way that I remember who I am. It's really easy to forget that I'm a compulsive overeater, that I have this disease. You know, I'd like to sometimes, but I can't, because the moment that I forget is the moment when I'm on the road back into the disease. And I really want to stay on the road to recovery. So I have to have contact with people. You know, my food plan is really black and white. I like to say it's black and white and life is gray. And I have a copy of it. I used to travel with a copy of my food plan for years and years. I do know it. I don't change my food a whole lot. So it's only when I have to introduce something maybe new that I have to look up the weight on it or something like that or whatever. But I do travel. And so I have to relate. I do travel. I'd like to cruise. Many years ago, I wanted to cruise. And my husband did a lot of arranging for me. So he called Cruise Line and he said, you know, my wife has food restrictions. Can you guarantee me that she can get what she wants? He said, no, we can't. I can't cruise with you then. He said, because you're telling me that I'm going to pay all this money and you won't guarantee it. A couple of years later, this particular line bought their own ship. So they were actually renting the ship or whatever, leasing the ship from someone else. Called him again. And he said, you know, I know you're not, you bought your own ship. Can you guarantee it? He said, yes, we can. I said, okay, let's book. And they do. I register as a medical, that I have a medical condition that I'm allergic to certain food substances. So that's how I travel, in particular by cruise. And so when I get on the ship, I'm already registered, when I get on the ship, they know that. And I go and I check in. And then when I go and eat in the restaurant at night, they actually give my menu the night before for the following evening. And that makes my life really nice and comfortable. That's when I do that type of travel. If I travel anywhere else, I call ahead restaurant. I make sure that I'm taken care of, because I think I'm important enough for that, you know. And this is not about it's not about food, but I have to take care of the food end of it in order for everything else to fall into place sometimes, because I don't want to have to worry about that end of it, you know. So, you know, in my job, I have to go to retirement sometimes. I have to go to, you know, maybe a business something function or whatever. I call ahead, you know. At this point in my, I've been working for a very long time, so they already know. We know that you need XYZ, you know.
okay, fine, thanks. I'm glad you took care of that.
No, but I also take care of that. I walk out of restaurants that don't serve me, that can't serve me. I usually check my menu before I sit down, but I mean, you know, it's okay. I figure that I'm worth it. And my family's used to it at this point, you know. And I carry things with me. You know, I carry my MA with me at whatever. I carry pieces of my breakfast sometimes with me, just because I think that it's important that I take care of it. And if for some reason I can't do without, I can never starve because I've missed a piece of my meal. I do write every night. I do read every night. And if for some reason I can, I do it the next day. You know, I don't let it go. And higher power is my greatest source of strength. Available. I used to think that that higher power was for deal making. That was my, you know, my past. It was like, okay, this is what I need. This is what I'll do. And that was how it worked. You know, if you can give me this, I'll do this. Or do this, then I'll do that. And I really didn't understand until I came into the rooms about spirituality at all. I really learned about it by listening to women and men in the rooms and how it works. I remember when I came into the rooms, I think I was in the rooms, a couple of months, and something happened in my life that was frightening. It was a job-related situation. It was very frightening for me. And I called someone in the room who I knew who had a lot of spirituality. And I said to him, I said, this is what's happening. Da, 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 da. And all he said to me was, have you prayed? I said, no. He said, well, why don't you try that? And I did. And I kept praying. And the situation continued for well over a year. And the situation did not bother me. I was not stressed out. After I prayed, I'd say maybe a couple, you know, number of period of time, amount of time, but it never bothered me like it did that initial amount of time once I started praying about it. I didn't have the fear that I had. And it was a situation I should be concerned about, you know? But I turned it over. But until I was reminded that I had to pray about it, you know? I learned that here. I didn't know those things, you know? And that helps me with my recovery. You know, now I know about turning things over. And sometimes I forget, but I get bopped on the head every once in a while, you know. A voice or someone will say something or, you know, it comes about. I know that I have to work the steps, you know. We have had those, go to step meetings. We've had wonderful meetings. And if I don't do that, then I'm only doing this small part of the program, you know, and that's how I did it initially. And I don't have any regrets on how when I first came in the room and how I did it, because that was a learning process. That's all I knew, you know. But this is a program of growth. I'm in here for life, you know, one day at a time, though, much. Can't only handle it one day at a time. But that's the way it works. And as I keep moving along, I keep learning new things in program. And I'm learning about myself in particular. And that's what, as far as I know, that's what it's supposed to all be about. And learning how to work the program along the way. And so every time I go to a meeting or any time I go to anything, I keep learning new things from other people. People that have been in the program less than I have, longer than I have, it really doesn't matter. But there's a lot of wisdom in the rooms. There's a lot of wisdom in the literature. It takes a willingness and it takes action, you know. And higher power keeps presenting me with things, you know. My biggest defect or thing that concerns me the most is my socialization and how to socialize and how to integrate with people, my relationship with people. And I know the higher power keeps presenting me with, as the years go on, situations where I can be exposed to that and work on that and They're baby steps. Continues on and on, baby steps. So this summer I'm going to see family now in California. And that's a blessing. I haven't seen them in a very, very long time. And that's something that I want to do for my own family. It's something I want to do for myself. You know, so we've laid some steps as reintroduction of family. I would have never thought to do that. You know, had I been into the food, had I not been working the steps along the way, wouldn't even thought about it. You know, and also the support of my spouse, who's also helped me along the way. Okay, and people within the room, my sponsor. So that's a blessing. That's a blessing to be able to do these things. I am who I am. You know, it would be wonderful to say that, you know, coming into the room, I suddenly changed and became a whole new person. It doesn't work that way. You know, I take me to here. The changes are minute. You know, it's not the diet mentality. I had to get rid of that a long time ago. The idea that when I lost the weight, and I lost 75 pounds when I came into the room, that I would suddenly become this miraculous person, that all my defects would disappear. It doesn't work like that. You know, that's the diet mentality. The truth is that coming into the room and working the program, my defects have been exposed. They're here. They're out. You know? But I can laugh about that. You know? I am blessed that I now can actually see them. Because before, I ate over them. They were covered up. I did not want to talk to you about them. Or rather, you were the problem. I rationalized the fact away that you were the cause of my being unaccepting, being in control, being annoyed, being angry, or whatever. You know, it was your problem, your fault. You know, my poor spouse, as far as I was concerned, he should know by osmosis and diffusion as to what I wanted. So, but I don't accept it anymore. I know that it's up to me to speak up and speak out. But, you know, now the defects are there. I've done the Wisconsin four-step system. And it's up to higher power for me to surrender the higher power, but also for me to take the action, you know, that needs to be taken. But it's a very slow process, lifelong process. But I don't have to be ashamed of those defects that I have because they are, you know, we're working on, and that's truly a gift, not to have to be ashamed of who I am. And so when I become angry, I lose my temper. I can make amends for that, you know, as long as I don't keep doing it every time. You know, I can make those amends. If I am too controlling, I can also make amends. You know. A little controlling today. I was in the backyard with the contractors. But I was pleasant about it. And I wasn't an annoyance. So, you know, there's actions that I can take that I didn't know I could take before. And that's all a blessing of the program, you know. That the program has given to me, and for that I'm very, very grateful. I think that an acknowledgement of my defects, an acceptance of my defects, but a surrender of them to higher power is what will lead me not out of them, but lead me to have them start to diminish. Okay, have them change, okay, to do what his will is in regard to them, not my will. Okay, because my will got me here. My will is the reason I landed in these rooms. Thank God, you know, that I did. because I think that it's a blessing to the family, you know, that I learned to hear and live a much better life if I hadn't learned some of it, you know. So I think that it's been an interesting journey coming into the rooms of OA, you know, and I know that the journey will continue in the rooms. I think that, you know, it used to be a big illusion, big grand illusion that I was living by, you know, and today I live in the day, you know, and it's a one day at a time. That was one of the greatest, most helpful things I think someone said to me, and that was stay in the day, stay in the minute, stay in the hour, you know. When things become overwhelming, and I find at times that life can be extremely overwhelming, just stay in the day. If someone had told me when I started this a very long time ago, you're never going to eat, I don't eat sugar, flour, and wheat, you're not going to eat sugar, flour, and wheat for the rest of your life, I'd say, you got to be kidding, you know? But now it's 11 years, I don't eat sugar, flour, and wheat, you know? A day at a time, you know. I don't know about tomorrow. I can tell you right now, I don't do it, you know. There's so many things, you know. Just the other day, I was with my mom, who sometimes can be difficult, and she has surgery, and I need to be there, love her dearly. And it's one day at a time, one at a time, you know. And my character defects were coming through. Had nothing to do with her. You know, and I prayed to higher power. Like, remove my character defect right now of unacceptance. And, you know, lo and behold, by the end of the night, it was removed. The next day was beautiful. Because I said to myself, this has nothing to do with her. This has to do with me and my unacceptance. You know? So, that surrender on my part. And I'm grateful because being abstinent, I recognized it. I didn't the food would have been all about her. Not about me whatsoever. So that's truly truly a gift. I am really happy to have been here to share my journey of recovery with you. And it is a one day at a time journey, and I'm really glad to be in the present, living life, and not living in illusion anymore. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Susan, can you tell us how you work step 11?
I think that I take time every day, for the most part, and by myself, and I pray, and I do meditate, okay? It's not formal, okay? I know some people do it different ways. To talk to higher power. One prayer I always use is the serenity prayer. Now, I use it any time during the day when anything stresses me out, okay? So that's one aspect. I say to myself all the time, in my job, and sometimes in another room, I will just, like, not say anything, just start saying to myself, driving, any time at all. That's my quick prayer, the serenity prayer, always. And have used that from the beginning. Even here, before we began, that's one way of calming my mind. Okay. In terms of meditation, when I get up first thing in the morning, okay, I usually do a quick kind of meditation, clear the mind, and I may start with the serenity prayer. I may just use any type of that I find. I use some type of rote prayer to clear my mind, and then that's how I try to connect with higher power.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Yeah. Do you find that after you're doing this stuff every day, do you have any particular hobbies that you find that bring you close to God? Like for me, I sing, and after I meditate, and then it brings me close to my higher power. Do you have any hobbies that when you do them, you feel your higher power's presence?
Not through hobbies normally. I can be very compulsive about those also, you know. But I do enjoy, I guess, probably anything involving the arts, like hands-on arts, you know. If I have time to do those, that would be the closest thing, like scrapbooking and things like that, and drawing. So they would be the things that, you know, would bring me closest because they're an expression of myself.
Any other questions? Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.